The show today, it is a Thursday afternoon. I'm with you between now and 6 o'clock in our West Waterford studios in Dungarvan. You're talking away already.
I want to get out of here before the astronomical high tide. I'd be stuck in Dungarvan for the week.
An astronomical height. Where are we going all these tides? I said it to somebody today. How can we have a spring tide this time? They said, no, it's when the moon and the sun are in alignment with each other.
Oh, it's like tarot cards or something like
something
that.
Something like that.
Get your palm right.
Yeah, that's it. Pat Short, how are you?
I'm great, John. Thank you for having me in here. It's great
astronomical
to see you.
Height, can you imagine? We're stuck here for the week, lads. We can't get out. Listen, I'm delighted to have you here. I haven't spoken to you.
In age.
We're going to go pre a certain couple of years that we don't want to talk about anymore.
No, we don't want to talk about that.
That's 5 years ago since. Yeah, 5 years ago since I last spoke to you.
Oh my God! What show was I doing?
You were doing you were the Undertaker.
The funeral show. That was a great show. I toured all over the place with that show. I'll tell you a good one about that show. I was in New York with it, and I nearly got arrested because I was stopped on the highway. I was doing Boston as well, and I had the coffin in the back of a van. Driving around, and it wasn't a van, it was like an estate car, so you could see it. Yeah. It was all mad. But I was doing the show in New York, and a guy from, I think he's from Cork originally, he was an undertaker, and he came to the show, and he loved the show, and he must have come about four times, brought loads of friends. And then on the last week, he said, look, I'm opening a new funeral home in Queens. Would you ever open it for me? I was thinking, like, what in the name of Jesus would a comedian be doing?
Oh, what happened when you opened it?
I didn't open it.
You didn't open it.
I couldn't do it.
Oh, Lord. You wouldn't have another show out of that. an undertaker behind the scenes.
Funeral home.
Could you imagine it? Where would you meet the comedy in that?
I know.
But you managed to do it.
He was a character.
You still love that kind of, yourself and Faye now, of course, you're here in Dungarvan, the Town Hall this weekend.
We're here Saturday night, in Dungarvan, and we're looking forward to it. It's great. I was just down in the theatre earlier on, chatting to all the crew down there, and it's a beautiful venue, gorgeous theatre, and really looking forward to it. And myself and Faye are all, we're touring at the moment. This is the last run of this show. It's called Knuckle Down, and we've been touring it for the last year, but it's coming to an end, so we're kind of hitting all the last venues. We haven't played Dungarvan with it yet, so this will be the first and last time with this show, and we're doing the Olympia in Dublin and all sorts of venues, and finishing up, I think, in a tour of Australia with it. It'll be about a 2 month tour of Australia
in the new year, in 2025, is it?
Yeah, May, Australia, New Zealand, across there. But we're having a blast, the two of us.
And is it still a case of there's nobody safe in the audience?
Yeah, well, I'd say I don't want to put people off coming on Saturday night. Everybody is safe in the audience.
Do you know the thing about it? Every time I met you, we're always talking about the show, and you say, I won't pick on you tonight. I'm going, God almighty.
I shouldn't give away this, but I love going down into the audience, talking to the audience.
Yeah.
But I think it puts the fear of God in people, or what's he going to do? I suppose I just use the audience as a channel. And talk to them and in character. And that's the great thing about the characters I do, is that you think the audience, I do it in such a way that I think I know these people all my life.
Yeah.
Chatting to them. But I don't embarrass them. I don't do anything like that. I don't get them to jump up and down, do things, or like a hypnotist to make them run around looking for chickens or anything like that.
You're not a Keith Barry.
I'm not. But fair play to Keith. I don't think he does it either.
No. But that with Faye, and as you say, you're taking that to Australia. I mean, that must be great to travel with herself and work with herself. I mean, it's a bit of fun.
I love it. Working with your daughter can be painful at times, and I'm sure she'd say the same to me about me. But it is lovely, and we had great fun recently. We were over in London doing a few shows, and that was great crack with the crew touring over there. And that was the first kind of a broad show that Faye had done with me. And it's always a weird one, because you even though you go into London and they speak English, they don't speak like us. It's amazing how much that I've met loads of people afterwards that were Irish. They all loved the show, but they said I had to interpret for himself there beside me because he couldn't understand the words you were saying. It's funny, but sure, that's the way, and that makes it, I think, as a comedian, and that makes you kind of think more about you have to be true to your material, but you need to kind of be careful about how you deliver it. You don't alienate everyone.
And I was laughing. I was in work the other day, and I won't say an age gap, but there's a difference to me and some of the people that are there. Of a couple of decades.
That,
you can see it, can't you? But the beauty of it was, I was talking to another person of the same vintage as myself, and we said, do you remember? And it actually came back to us in a heartbeat. The old Buddy Brody Brennan and Roundy Mooney dance. We were doing the dance, right?
Oh, yeah.
And they were looking at us and going, what are you doing? You don't know. You don't understand. You don't know about proper comedies. But I mean, it comes from all those years of that and into this now as well. But the other side of you, and I was only speaking about it as well, is well, I won't say this is serious, but it's completely different.
Yes.
And of course, the acting and everything. I was only talking again, as I said to you just before we came on air about the garage. And not just saying because you're here. And I've said this many times. It is one of my favourite films because of... I didn't expect this from you, firstly. I didn't expect it. I'm not going to say anything. If you haven't seen The Garage, stream it, do it, get it whatever way
it's
you can get it.
It's a few years old now.
God, it is. It must be 10, 15 years, is it? Easily.
20, nearly.
Is it 20?
I think it was 2006, so it's 18 years now. Since.
But the beauty is that there's the hints of the comedy is there, but then there's the hints of Ireland as it was and the way it is.
It's beautifully written. Mark O'Halloran is such an amazing writer, and he wrote a film called Adam and Paul before that, and I'd known Mark for years. We'd acted together on a few films and stuff like that. Lenny Abramson, who directed it, we'd done a few commercials together. Yeah. And actually, Lenny was due to work with me on Killing Scully. He was going to be one of the first directors on it. He'd agreed to do it. And he said to me, if I'm waiting for money to come through for his film, but I don't expect it to come through for another year, Adam and Paul. And he said, if it comes through, Pat, I'm going to have to step back. And I was delighted for him. It came true.
Yeah.
What a movie. That was incredible. So when they asked me to do Garage, I already knew the work that they were doing himself and the guys in Element, Ed Kiney and that, and Mark O'Halloran and Lenny as a team writing and directing. So it was a no-brainer to take it on. Yet at the same side, it was a tough gig because there was lots of physical scenes in it. And I think that's why Lenny wanted me to work on it. But it was a beautiful story as well. And as I say, Mark, a lot of people describe it in Irish film sense as a perfect storm, is what they say.
Oh, God, it is.
Because
it's
a great director, great cameraman, great writer, great producers, acting on all levels with the cast and the music. You know, literally, there wasn't one bad thing about that movie.
The Garage, check it out. It is great to be part of it, you know. And I mean, what a part you played in it, you know.
I worked hard at it, and when you get a script like that, it's great, you know, and work with those people.
And it was the kind, I don't know if it was that movie, but it was movies like that that took you away from that whole, you weren't even typecast, but took you away from that kind of what you did on stage and stuff.
It took a lot of people by surprise in Ireland, and yet internationally then in Los Angeles and London and everything, people only knew me from Garage. They didn't know the comedy side of me, apart from Father Ted. And that was interesting. It opened me up to a lot of directors like John Boorman and people like that, and I worked with them subsequently on different films. And some American directors as well I'd worked with, and a lot of it stemmed, like I did Bodkin and the writers there, the showrunners were all American, and they all loved Garage. I did a film called Sisters, and they were all Canadian. They had seen Garage, and so it's funny when it was the biggest art house film in the world that year.
It was.
To put it into context, it won the award in Cannes, and that then opened it up to 120 countries or something like that.
Which is amazing.
It was incredible.
And you mentioned Father Ted.
Oh yeah.
Do people still quote the lines here? I know I would if I could.
I toured Australia a few years back, and I did Sydney, Brisbane, Melbourne, all major cities, and every time I got to a city, promoters had me booked in to do a radio interview, and every radio interview I did, I got a I Shot JR t-shirt from the presenters. I came home with a bag full of I Shot JR t-shirts. I had none at home. It just shows you how big that show is around the world.
Listen, I mean, it's incredible. Like, I mean, it's 30 years next year that Father Ted started on the air. I mean, and it feels like that.
I remember my first time, because I'd never tell the kids. And when Faye was young, we were on holidays in Portugal with my brother and his wife and their kids.
Yeah.
And you know the crack like that when you got two families go away, all the kids go off down watching the DVD. And the brother's kids had brought Father Ted with them.
Right.
And they were showing it to my kids. And there was a scream from downstairs, Dad, you're in this! You're in this! I thought, what? Father Ted? I said, jeez, I never thought of telling them I was in it.
I forgot to tell them
they never watched it.
And what a role it was.
It was great. It was great.
But again, the thing about Ted, and I'm going to move on from Father Ted in a second, but the thing about Father Ted is that anybody like yourself who did those little roles, the Brendan Grace roles, Father Stack, Tommy Tiernan, and any of those, it was just, you were on it, a blink of an eye, you could have been gone again.
Yeah.
But it just, whatever it was about Father Ted, it just lasted the test of time.
It did, and Graham and Arthur, who wrote it, Graham Lynn and Arthur Matches, two of the best comic writers, I think, in the world, almost. Mm. And they're certainly in this side of the pond anyway. And that's a classic example of one of the all-time great sitcoms. Mm. Every character was brilliant. Mm. Every even if you're only on for a snippet and you're only in one episode, it was memorable. Yeah. You'd look at the milkman guy, you know, Pat Laffin, he's gone from his sense, but, you know, all those characters, the priest that was boring. And, they were just so well written.
Was it a boring voice you were looking for?
And I was looking with Tom. I was in, I think, 6 episodes of the first 2 series. So it was quite a big character to be in it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it didn't do me any harm at all.
Yeah. Absolutely not. Now, from all of that, the first time we saw you back in the day, back, you know, when you're on stage, Seth and John and stuff. But the first time I remember you came out on stage with a saxophone.
Yes.
And you're no stranger to music and to instruments. You were telling me a saxophone, a bit of the piano, the mandolin and the guitar.
Yeah.
And the flute.
And the flute as well. And a few other bits and pieces.
You're a man of many talents, in fairness to you.
Well, I started off playing music. I mean, I started as a young fella playing piano at the age of 6 and then went on to play. I love traditional music. My dad was a great fiddle player, so I learned to whistle and the flute and all that. And, then in the 80s, saxophone was very sexy. And you get a good...
You couldn't have a song without it.
You'd pull a young one if you could blow a horn, does he? If you could hold one. It was funny. I remember, do you know the classic saxophone guy in The Simpsons? I mean, I remember seeing an interview about him. He played with Tina Turner and he was that big sax solo and all that kind of stuff.
Bleeding Gums Murphy.
And he used to wear a jockstrap and all that. That was his look and long hair, the kind of thing. And he said, come to the early 90s, he wasn't being hired by anybody. There was no sax solos. And he ended up doing weddings and things like that. And he did some TV show, which The Simpsons saw him doing, and it launched him off again.
And away he went.
Off he went again.
Oh, yeah, there wasn't any. You think of Careless Whispers. Yeah, you know, saxophone and Baker Street from the 70s.
Yes, they all had to have a sax solo.
God,
and as a sax player, I got booked by loads of bands. I was working every day playing jazz with a quartet. Sundays I used to play jazz sessions in the morning, jazz in the afternoon with a big band, and then late night with somebody else or John Kenny on. So I was doing 3 gigs on a Sunday, 2 on a Saturday, and then a couple during the midweek. So it was great.
Well, I tell you, the reason that we're talking about that, because yourself and Mike Hanrahan from the Stockton's Wind, I'm going to take a very quick ad break.
Lovely.
And we come straight. Pat Short is my guest in the studio.
It's here. The all-new, all-electric Ford Explorer with a range of up to 602 kilometres. Test drive it today. See waterfordcityford.ie.
The Spin Home with John Keane. Thanks to Waterford City Ford.
WLR.
And very welcome back into the show today. Now, a big hello to Brenda, who says, man about dog, best film ever. I won't mention the line she said, but it was about the van.
There's a couple of good lines in that movie, actually. A
couple of great lines. And Brenda, Miriam was on as well, enjoying the chat with you as well, Pat. We were talking about Songs of Ireland. You were in Gartalane.
Yes,
apologies for that.
Yes.
You were in Gartalane. Yeah. Yourself and Mike Hanrahan from Stockton's Wing. Now, I mean, tell me a little bit about the whole premise of this, because we won't say anything else about what may happen in the future, but tell me a little bit about the premise of where this came from, the Songs of Ireland.
Well, Mike and myself, I know Mike 30-odd years when I met him in the Bell Table in Limerick in a concert. I was with John Kenny playing sax. So Mike always knew me as a musician and not so much a comedian. And then I had a bar in Castle Martyr. A lot of people might know it down this neck of the woods because they're going to matches in Cork and what have you. And I was looking for a head chef. And Sue Collins was touring with me at the time doing stand-up. And she was married to Phelan and Drew. She still is. I get shocked for that. And Sue said to me, give Mike a shout when you're down there. Sure, he's down below in Ballymaloe. And I was like, what's he doing in Ballymaloe? And she told, I found out that he was, he trained in Ballymaloe and then went off and worked in restaurants. And then he went back working in Ballymaloe, teaching. Yeah. So when I was down, I met him for a pint and said, Jesus, Mike, you'll know a load of chefs. I'm looking for someone as a head chef to run the place. And he said, I'll do it. So that started a couple of years of madness, I can tell you. Great music festivals and gigs and stuff going on. Mike was, but he's an incredible chef as well as everything else. And while we were working together, we kind of thought we'd love to do a TV show together of some sort, you know, because he's just an amazing chef and a great musician, incredible. He's one of the best singer-songwriters we've produced in this country. So we kind of came up with an idea to do something. We pitched it a few places, didn't really work, and left it at that. And Mike had been talking to a producer in Dublin about it. And the current show, Songs of Ireland, really came about through a producer called Brian Redden in Dublin, who that was his concept, which kind of, I suppose he was looking at it with the view to the two of us doing it, because Mike had brought it up and Mike knew him quite well and I knew Brian as well. So they pitched it and we got the finance to put it together and we did it. And the whole premise of the show is 20 songs in 20 counties. And really we were just there to accompany young artists on a song which was chosen by the producers for them. And the idea was songs that we thought we knew, you know. So The Wild Colonial Boy is a classic example of it, you know. I grew up listening to that song and everything else. And, of course, everybody knows the start of the song. There was a Wild Colonial Boy, Jack Duggan was his name. He was born in Reardon, Ireland, in the town called Castlemaine in Kerry, you know. Yeah. So we used to get an expert every time we go along. And sure, we went... Billy Keane was our expert down in Kerry. I know if you know Billy, John B. Keane's son. Billy's a character, great journalist, great character. But if Billy doesn't know anything about it, he'll make it up. He's a great man for that. But they told us, well, we found out, you know, we're going to do the TV show and we find out that Castlemaine, the song actually is an Australian song, and Castlemaine is in Australia.
Right, okay.
And someone from Ireland robbed it and brought it home. But that doesn't stop the Kerry crowd. They'll put a monument up, a big car park for buses, and they'll flog it to the Yanks all day long and anyone that'll pay money.
And they even have signs
over pubs saying he was born here.
Comical, isn't
it? Nothing to do with it.
They get away with murder in this country.
There was an old woman from Wexford, and she wasn't from Wexford at all. She was from Boston.
Right.
And that was an American song, which was brought back to Ireland.
Yeah.
And it was very funny. Like, we were going around the country, and this team was starting to emerge. We were thieving whores, the lot of us, robbing all around the place.
Did we write anything in this country?
No.
It was Franklin Road, even sure, ours, though.
People, anyone who did music back was Moore's Melodies.
Yeah.
He never wrote a song in his life.
It's comic, isn't it?
He wrote the lyrics.
Yeah.
And the melodies were all from other songs. And I mean, I don't know what era he was. We did one of his songs, Corrav Kildare. People would know that song. That was a Moore's melody. But he was the Bono of his era.
Right.
And he was, they were known as parlour songs. Because the wealthy people, obviously there was no real gigs and stuff in those days, so they'd have concerts in the house in the parlour, and they'd sing songs. And his was a favourite. Moore's Melodies was translated into multiple languages, even as far as Russia,
right,
and all over Europe. So he was a rock star of his time.
Yeah. Are you done with that completely now?
No. We're Seth and Faye are touring. The show we're doing is on in the town hall
this weekend
on Saturday. But Faye is after taking on the Panto in Limerick, which she's very excited about. She's doing a lot of she's after presenting a show which is going out in air soon called Junkature, which is a big show for Faye to get. I'm delighted for her. And she's also, she's doing your gig, John. You could be out of gigs. She's a DJ with Spin Southwest with the Bar Group down in Limerick, you know, which is national. So she's very busy doing different projects, which allows me to go back out with Mike on the road. And we were talking about bringing the show to Dungarvan.
Okay.
Which is, we're really looking forward to getting out and doing a few more shows over Christmas. The tour's been going very well for us. We put out a small tour that went really well in Wexford, Waterford, and Kerry and other places. And we were up in Dublin with it and Wicklow. So I'm looking forward, because that's where I started playing music, you know.
Yeah, that's and this is the thing, you love this as much as the comedy.
I do, but there's a bit of comedy in it as well. I mean, if anyone saw the TV show over the summer, there was great humour and crack between yourself and Mike, because that's kind of...
There's nice banter going on there, wasn't there?
We do the same on stage. So anyone come to see the show, we'll hear the songs and we'll have a bit of crack as well.
Which is easier, which is harder to do?
I don't know. Like, I love comedy. I love getting up in front of an audience and I get a character and you get into the groove and get out in front of an audience.
Yeah.
And Faye is amazing. I have to say that. Like, she didn't just kind of... We didn't just turn around one day at the kitchen table and say, would you come out on the road? Like, she trained as an actress for 3 years in drama school and film school and everything. And she's very, very funny lady. So she's got that comic bone. Probably didn't lick it up off the side of the road. So it's, and it's just, it, I really feel now myself and Faye are in a groove, because we've been nearly 3 years touring at this stage, which is a lot. Yeah.
It's a lot. You're straight out of that time and that as well.
Yeah.
And before I let you go, and listen, thanks so much for coming in, because it's always a pleasure to have you in. Don't leave us so long the next time.
I don't want to get my ankles wet now, John. So I want to flake out.
The astronomical high tide that's coming our way. But the thing about it is, next for you then, after this, Like, I mean, we were all used to seeing you on Sunday nights on our TVs for a long number of years. We enjoyed all of that, and we see the reruns of that. We see the reruns of Father Ted. We see the reruns of different things, and all our old, again, of a vintage, our old VHS and DVDs that we have for different shows.
The tapes.
But I mean, what's next for you, Pat?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm racing out of here to do two Johnnies tonight.
Up the country. TV,
That'll be a bit of fun. I love the two boys. They're great crack always. I just finished a series. I finished my contribution. They're still filming a new series on Netflix. I finished at the weekend in Belfast. It's called Belfast to Heaven. Lisa McGee, who wrote The Derry Girls, it's her new offering, and it's fantastic. Humongous cast. It's Netflix. It's huge. It's hard to describe it, but it's a mammoth job. And it was, look, it's great to be involved in these projects. There's a film I can't make it over there because I think I have a few gigs up the country, but I have a film opening in Los Angeles in the next 2 weeks, premiering over there, and premiering in Belfast called Dead Man's Money, which is a great, dark, funny film. Kieran McMenamin's in it with me, and I had a blast making that a year or so ago. So there's lots of things. There's a few projects on the cards for next year as well, which I'm talking to people about at the moment, and looking forward to that.
Excellent. Well, Faye and yourself then this Saturday night here in Dungarvan.
Yep.
Doors open at?
Doors 7:30, show at 8 o'clock. There's going to be tickets on the door as well. Anyone who doesn't get using the computer and booking, there's a few left.
Listen, Pat Short, it's been an absolute
John,
pleasure.
My pleasure. Thank you
very
so much.
Mind yourself and talk to you soon. Thanks a lot.